Chapter 7. The Future of Geopolitics and Globalization. What are some of the biggest problems that the world faces over the next decade? What are Russia's long-term prospects? Will Brazil, Russia, India, and China, the so-called BRIC countries, gain influence as a bloc over time? Will the ASEAN countries gain influence as a bloc over time? What lessons have you learned from the global financial crisis? What opportunities and challenges does globalization present? What must individuals, companies, and countries do to succeed in a globalizing world? Is globalization reversible? This chapter offers Lee Kuan Yew's direct and penetrating answers to these questions. What are some of the biggest problems that the world faces over the next decade?
First, there is the Eurozone. If the Greek debt crisis is not handled properly, it will affect Portugal, Spain, and Italy. Then you have a chain reaction that harms not only the economies of Europe, but also those of the U.S. and China. Second is the perennial problem of North Korea. A young man, Kim Jong-un, has taken over and is trying to show the world that he is as bold and adventurous as his predecessors. Third is Japan's stagnation, which directly affects the whole of the Asia-Pacific. The aging of its society has prevented its economy from taking off. Japan is not accepting migrants because it wants to maintain a pure-blooded population. Fourth is the chance of a conflict in the Middle East over the bomb that Iran is developing, which would have a catastrophic impact on markets. Iran's nuclear program is the challenge that the world is most likely to bungle. China and Russia are unlikely to enforce UN sanctions, and if Iran feels like they will continue not to enforce them, it will be encouraged to continue building a bomb. At some point, Israel has to decide whether, with or without U.S. support, whether to try and destroy Iran's hardened underground shelters. If Iran gets the bomb, Saudi Arabia will buy the bomb from Pakistan. The Egyptians will buy the bomb from someone, and then you have a nuclearized Middle East. Then, it is only a matter of time before there is a nuclear explosion in the region.
What are Russia's long-term prospects?
Russia's future is no different than it was 10 years ago, or even 20 years ago, when the Soviet Union collapsed, except that it has lost its hold on energy resources in the Caucasus and Kazakhstan. It has been unable to develop an economy that generates wealth independent of exports of energy and natural resources. The Russian population is declining. It is not clear why, but alcoholism plays a role. So do pessimism, a declining fertility rate, and a declining life expectancy. Vladimir Putin's challenge is to give Russians a hopeful outlook for the future. Stop drinking, work hard, build good families, and have more children. Siberia and Vladivostok are filling up with more and more Chinese. The lands on the bend of the Amur River will be repopulated by Chinese. Russians may suddenly decide that the future is worth living and bring more children into the world to reverse this demographic trend, but I do not see that shift occurring in the near future. They would do enormously better if they could get their system right. Their system is not functioning because it has gone haywire. They have lost control over the various provinces. They have got an enormous nuclear arsenal, but what else? Their army is a very different army now. Their population is declining. Every year more Russians die than Russians are born because people are not optimistic. In America, people are optimistic and say, "I will bring a child into the world." But when your life is so harsh and from time to time it gets better when the oil prices go up, but that is momentary, you have a different view of the future.
Will Brazil, Russia, India, and China, the so-called BRIC countries, gain influence as a bloc over time?
As a counterweight, yes. They will be able to prevent excesses by the Americans and the Europeans, But otherwise, no. They are different countries on different continents that happen to be growing faster than other combinations of countries on those continents. So somebody said, why not bring them all together and make them into a global force? Sure, China will buy soybeans from Brazil. It is a growing country that needs resources and can pay for them. But the Chinese and Indians do not share the same dreams.
Will the ASEAN countries gain influence as a bloc over time?
Yes, but very slowly, because they have not internalized the idea of having a common market, combining resources and inviting investments into different parts of ASEAN, the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, depending on those parts' comparative advantages. They also lack confidence. Thailand is in some trouble over Thaksin Shinawatra and the monarchy. Vietnam remains very wary of China. Cambodia will take a long time to recover. Burma looks like it will open up this time, but think of its starting point. It has been closed for so long that nothing can make it worse. To remain at the center of East Asia's economic and political evolution, ASEAN must integrate more closely and with urgency. Otherwise, it will be marginalized. ASEAN lacks strategic weight. Placed between the giants of China and India, ASEAN countries have to combine their markets to compete and be relevant as a region. There is no other choice.
What lessons have you learned from the global financial crisis?
The global financial crisis was caused by excesses of the liberal system of regulations and the belief that a completely free market will allow enormous innovation and allocate capital to the most profitable enterprises with the highest returns. Once the Federal Reserve Chairman decided it was not necessary to regulate derivatives and supervise them, the fuse was lit. Once you find that you can mash up a lot of good and bad assets in one bundle and pass on your risk all around Europe and other parts of the world, you have started something like a Ponzi scheme which must come to an end sometime. The business of a person in a financial institution is to make the biggest profit for himself. So just condemning the bankers and the profit takers does not make sense. You have allowed these rules, and they work within these rules. Free enterprise has brought about this crisis. Governments have to carry the main burden and put the system right, and then allow private enterprise to pick up and carry on. But if, having put money into these banks and all these other enterprises, you then say you cannot pay out bonuses in such large sums, nor your stock options, then you will change the nature of the American free enterprise system. It has worked because you reward the people who make the company successful. We know such a recession must come from time to time. It is in the nature of the free markets of the Western world that our economy is plugged into. People and systems tend to be carried away by exuberance. Investors get greedy and rush in to buy, believing that prices will only go up. When prices collapse, investors find they have lost huge sums. Despair and depression then set in. Prior to the current economic crisis, the world did not challenge the Washington consensus that the Anglo-Saxon economic model is the most efficient for the allocation of financial resources to produce the highest return. However, the U.S. market model is no longer considered ideal. China is confident that it is better for the government to maintain control of and manage its economy. China will now also be slower to open its closed capital markets to avoid large inflows and outflows of speculative foreign currencies. Only large continental countries with huge populations like China's and India's can ramp up their domestic consumption to avoid being much affected by the current economic turmoil.
What opportunities and challenges does globalization present?
One phase in human history has ended. The new one promises to be exciting. The move that triggered off a globalized market began in March 1991, when the National Science Foundation privatized the Internet. Without quite realizing what a powerful instrument it would turn out to be, for increasing productivity, enabling people and businesses to reach out to others across national boundaries, and to create a global intellectual community and a global marketplace. Economic power will be spread over many centers across the globe. They are cities at the intersection, where people, ideas, and capital from various geographic regions meet, interact, and influence each other continually. These are the birthplaces of new knowledge, products, and services. Globalization's power was first demonstrated in the stock market 10 years ago, in July 1997, with the onset of the Asian financial crisis. Within days, all of the region's emerging markets were affected. The ultimate threat to human survival is global warming and climate change. The habitats of millions, maybe billions, of people may be damaged. The scramble for the riches under the ice is on. If sea levels rise to inundate many millions of people, and if glaciers in the Himalayas, Tibet, and the Andes melt away, leaving more millions without enough water, there will be no life as usual. It is technology, the human conquest of nature, that has changed the world forever, more so than all the changes in political and ideological spheres. What will affect your generation's lives more profoundly than any other factor is the increasing speed of scientific and technological change. Your lives will become healthier and longer because the human genome has been mapped. There will be a flowering of discoveries in biotechnology over the next few decades. There will be more food and goods for consumption worldwide. Trade and investments will expand globally as consumer societies thrive in more and more emerging countries. More people make for economic growth, more prosperity. More people worldwide also build up grave problems. Earth warming, rising sea levels, melting ice caps as carbon dioxide and greenhouse gases in the air change climates throughout the world. With a greater density of people, there will be more friction and conflicts as they fight for the same finite space in the world and for its limited resources, especially oil. There are deep and abiding problems. AIDS, drug smuggling, illegal migration, global mafias. They are part and parcel of the globalized world, like global terrorism. The present world is as full of promise as of perils. New technologies, instant communications, and fast transportations have integrated the world. Everybody knows what is going on around them in the world. Migrations have been massive. Hundreds of millions from the poorer countries are moving into the wealthier countries in search of a better life. Great changes are taking place. The old established powers, the U.S. and the EU, European Union, have to accommodate new emerging powers such as China, India, Russia, and Brazil. Many other developing countries are trying hard to catch up. Meanwhile, earth warming goes on as more carbon dioxide is released every day. Climate change will alter our habitat profoundly in ways we cannot foresee. The rapid technological advancements of the past few years have greatly accelerated globalization. With quantum leaps in telecommunications and innovations in information technology like the Internet, the world has become a much smaller place. Physical distance, time differences, and national borders are no longer barriers to the free flow of information. It is now no longer necessary to travel long distances to find new ideas. Vast amounts of information can be transmitted instantaneously at the touch of the keyboard from anywhere and at any time. This 10 in IT, information technology, revolution will alter the nature of societies. It will transform the way we live, learn, work, and use leisure time. Those countries that keep out advances of technology because of its undesirable byproducts will be losers. For better or worse, we have to seize the opportunities offered by the IT revolution, but try to minimize its harmful side effects. People must stay abreast of the state-of-the-art technology, but must never lose their core values. Science and technology are decisive in determining future progress, but they should not be allowed to break up families that have to imbue children with a strong sense of social responsibility and the conscience to distinguish between right and wrong. Before World War II, international trade was most free within the boundaries of each of the empires, the American, British, various European, and Japanese. There were trade barriers between these imperial blocs. The Americans were determined to dissolve these empires after World War II. GATT, the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, was designed to facilitate cross-border trade in goods and services without the unifying control of an imperial center. It succeeded brilliantly. But no one foresaw that technological advances in communications and transportation would lead to the growth and proliferation of multinational corporations that are able to expand the production and sale of goods, followed by services, across national boundaries, and market them to all parts of the world. Globalization, especially after the developments in the IT sector, has led to developed countries needing more talent. They have relaxed immigration rules and increased the mobility of talent in the developing world. Human talent is at present the most scarce and valuable resource for creating wealth in a knowledge economy. A negative result of globalization is the widening of the inequality between the highly educated and the less educated, between urban and rural incomes, and between coastal and inland provinces. The highly educated can move between countries seeking the high rewards in the developed countries, especially in sectors like IT and the Internet. The less educated are not mobile and cannot get into the developed countries, where wages are higher. This is unavoidable in a world driven by market forces. There are no historical precedents on how to maintain peace and stability and to ensure cooperation in a world of 160 nation-states. In the age of instant communications and swift transportation, with technology growing exponentially, makes this problem very complex. In one interdependent, interrelated world, the decline in the relative dominance of the leaders of the two blocs increases the likelihood of a multipolar world, and with it, the difficulties of multilateral cooperation.
What must individuals, companies, and countries do to succeed in a globalizing world?
At the Forbes Global CEO Conference on Entrepreneurship, Technology, and Business Leadership in the 21st Century, I asked myself, what is the difference between these factors in the past and at present? In their fundamentals, neither entrepreneurship nor business leadership has changed. What has changed, and changed beyond recognition, is technology. Technology requires entrepreneurs and business leaders to think and act globally. They cannot avoid collaborating with or competing against others internationally. An entrepreneur wins or loses in competition against all others in his line of business, whether they are national or foreign players, because all players will be able to enter his national domain and compete against him. As long as competition was confined within national boundaries, each country was able to nurture its national champions, and they developed different styles of entrepreneurship and business leadership, resulting in different corporate cultures. In today's globalized environment, brought about by the IT revolution and the WTO, World Trade Organization, is this possible? I believe it is infinitely more difficult for nations to create incubators for nurturing such national champions. The great challenge today is to adjust to the tectonic shift in the global economic balance. There will be a dramatic transformation in the decades ahead as China fully competes in the world economy as a member of the WTO. And India will not be left out. Our way forward is to upgrade our levels of education, skills, knowledge, and technology. Lifelong learning is a must for everyone in this knowledge economy, with rapidly changing technology. Those who are not well-educated and cannot retrain to be computer literate or learn new skills and acquire new knowledge every 5 to 10 years will find it harder to get jobs in convenient factories because such factories will not be economic in Singapore. To succeed, Singapore must be a cosmopolitan center, able to attract, retain, and absorb talent from all over the world. We cannot keep the big companies out of the local league. Whether we like it or not, they are entering the region. The choice is simple. Either we have a first-class airline, a first-class shipping line, and a first-class bank, or we decline. One of the things we did in the early years was to buck the third world trend by inviting the multinational corporations, and we succeeded. Now we must buck the third world trend to be nationalistic. We must be international in our outlook and practices. Our own talent must be nurtured to come up to world standards by exposure and interaction with their foreign peers. Some of our best have been attracted away by leading American corporations. This is part of the global marketplace. In an era of rapid technological change, Americans have shown that those countries with the largest number of startups, especially in the IT industry, which venture capitalist finance, will be winners in this next phase. Japanese, Koreans, and other East Asians have to accept some fundamental cultural changes to compete in a globalized marketplace. Those whose cultures help them to absorb and embrace talented people of different cultures to be part of the new corporate culture will have an advantage. Japanese and East Asians are ethnocentric, close-knit societies. They do not easily absorb foreigners into their midst. There has to be a fundamental change in cultural attitudes before Japanese and other East Asians can compete with the Americans who, because of their different history, easily absorb peoples of different cultures and religions into their corporate teams. The digital revolution and the convergence of communications, computers, and the media require more from us than simply copying the software innovations of the developed countries. Our enterprising young people must be given the space and scope to create businesses for themselves. The government must facilitate the venture capital funds. We have followed a safe, structured approach. Now, our talented young have to dispense with a safety net as they go on their own. Many will stumble and fall, but they must pick themselves up and try again. The process of opening up may make our society more unruly. The gravest challenge will be to protect the values we cherish. If you want to thrive in the modern world, then you must not be afraid. Technology and globalization have created a more level playing field. Because goods and services can be manufactured or produced anywhere, this has reduced the traditional competitive advantages of geographic location, climate, and natural resources. All countries can harness information technology and air transportation and join the global trading community in goods and services. It helps to close the gap between advantaged and disadvantaged countries. But one X factor remains a key differentiator, especially for developing countries. That is ethical leadership. A clean, efficient, rational, and predictable government is a competitive advantage.
Is globalization reversible?
Globalization cannot be reversed because the technologies that made globalization inevitable cannot be uninvented. In fact, better and cheaper transportation and communication will further advance the forces of globalization. Will the international order collapse? Can it? Can the world afford to allow it to collapse and go into anarchy? This interconnected world is not going to become disconnected. The problems will become more acute the other way. Overpopulation, earth warming, and displacements of millions, maybe billions of people. It scares me because many world leaders have not woken up to the peril that their populations are in. This melting ice cap, I expected great consternation. What would happen to this earth? But no. Has it triggered emergency meetings to do something about it? earth warming, the glaciers melting away? It is not an election issue. Leave it to the next president. You can ameliorate this problem, but you cannot solve it, because our dependency on energy will only grow. I do not see any tribal leader, any democratic leader, any dictator telling his people, we are going to forego growth, we are going to consume less, travel less, live a more Spartan life, and we will save the earth. There is no viable alternative to global integration.
Protectionism, disguised as regionalism,
will sooner or later lead to conflicts and wars between the regional blocs as they compete for advantage in non-bloc areas, like the oil countries of the Gulf. Globalism is the only answer that is fair, acceptable, and will uphold world peace.